You could be listening to any other station in the world right now, but you chose the home of Dave's Gone By. Why? I thought you knew.
There goes the Daverhood!
We got David Lefkowitz here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody. Welcome on this Sunday, November 1st, 2009, to the 319th episode of Dave's Gone By. That scraping and grunting sound you hear is me shoveling out here in Colorado. Actually, this is the story of my life, of course. I was just in New York for a week of theater going and seeing family and friends and come back to Colorado just in time for the first giant snowstorm of the season. You know, it was kind of like when I went to Florida a few weeks ago. It was 90 degrees and miserably hot over there, and came back to Colorado just in time for our first freeze, where it was 25. I don't know, I just guess the gods of weather are not with me these days. But, hey, it's great to be both in New York, and great to be back here sharing my trip with you. And also, let me tell you what else is going to be on this episode of Dave's Gone By. We've got Inside Broadway, because I did get to see a bunch of shows, and I'm going to be reviewing Bye Bye Birdie, Brighton Beach Memoirs, and Avenue Q. Yes, Avenue Q did not close. It just closed on Broadway and moved a few blocks over to Off-Broadway and reopened. I'm going to let you know what I thought. We'll also have some Broadway news and gossip of things that are going on and coming up. I'll be talking about the snow days in Colorado and, you know, my thoughts on being up in northern Colorado after having lived in New York for all of my life. And the one thing that we were warned about here is, well, be careful of the weather and the winters. So we got some. So I'll be talking about that in the Dave Goes Off segment later on in the show. But the centerpiece of this episode of Dave's Gone By, which we're calling Theosophy, has to do with our very, very special guest, an absolute legend in, oh my gosh, movies, theater, music, folk music, the acting community, in, I guess, charitable and political circles. He's 85 years old and going absolutely strong. He's Theodore Bekel, and he's going to be off-Broadway in his one-man show, Sholem Aleichem, Laughter Through Tears, running at the Baruch Performing Arts Center from November 8th to December 13th. Now, ages and ages ago on this program, I had an interview with Theodore Bekel. It was very nice. It was fun to talk to him, and you know, very informative, and he's had such an amazing career in so many ways that you only scratch the surface when you talk to him. But it was one of those real bad days for me at the former radio station where I used to be, and I hit the wrong button, and instead of playing the Theodore Bekel interview, I erased the Theodore Bekel interview. So I only, you know, except for that one time it was on the air, nobody got to hear it. So I apologized for that, and I felt a little embarrassed about going back and talking to him and interviewing him again. So happily, miraculously, I would say, I had someone step in for me to do the interview. Someone even more appropriate than I to interview someone like Theodore Bekel. Of course, I'm talking about Rabbi Saul Solomon, the spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. So yes, Rabbi Saul and Theodore Bekel will be chatting later on in this episode of Dave's Gone By. Not to be missed. And also, please don't miss patronizing our sponsors for this show, because we wouldn't have a show without these sponsors. Those include Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy Kings of Broadway, been around since the 1970s, run by the Torong family. I mean, there's Minutemans all over the place, but this particular one on Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island. They're great, and you get 10% off any copy job, big or small, just by mentioning Dave's Gone By. Call 516-569-5577 for Hewlett Minuteman Press. 516-569-5577. Program is also brought to you by Fancy Schmancy Balloons, owned and operated by my friend Jeff Goodman, who's vacationing in Singapore at the moment. But when he comes back, please call him at 516-797-3229. 516-797-3229 for all your party decorating needs. It isn't just balloon animals and stuff like that. It's giant balloon archways and centerpieces for your party, anything that you need to make your party look really great. 516-797-3229. Shouldn't your party be a fancy schmancy event? Programs also brought to you by Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway since 1944. For more information, please go to performingartsinsider.com, and please go to my website, davesgoneby.org, to see how you can subscribe to Performing Arts Insider for a very, very strongly discounted price. PerformingArtsInsider.com and DavesGoneBy.org. Oh, and by the way, please also go to TotalTheater.com. It's a wonderful website of theater reviews and feature stories from all over the world. Fascinating stuff and absolutely free. So if you're thinking about seeing a Broadway show and you want to read a review of it, go to TotalTheater.com. And also go back to davesgoneby.org to hear old and new episodes of this program. All our archives are there for free. Over, 318 of these. And you can either download them to your iPod and listen to them that way, or just stream them right there on your computer anytime. And you can go backwards and forwards. You can skip the boring bits or go listen to them again and again, absolutely free, at davesgoneby.org. Well, enough about the old shows that we've done. We've got to move forward with this brand new one with Rabbi Sol Solomon, Theodore Bakel, A Bunch of Snow, and a lot of Broadway. Do not go away.
Print it, copy it, send it as a gift. All that and more at Hewlett Minuteman Press, your full-service printer, family-owned and operated since 1975. Photocopying, printing, wedding invitations, and grave gifts, Minuteman. 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Call 516-569-5577. 569-5577. On the web at hewlett.minutemanpress.com. And mention Dave's Gone By to get 10% off.
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TotalTheater.com.
Yes, we go inside Broadway for news of the Rialto. Does anybody even use that phrase anymore, the Rialto? It's the Great White Way. It's Broadway, off-Broadway, and off-off-Broadway. What's going on the stages of New York, where, by the way, I was last week. I went back there to see a bunch of shows, and I'm going to review a few of them on this segment of Inside Broadway, but first we do the news and let you know what's going to be coming up on New York stages. Here's a phrase that I'll bet if I just say this word, this one word, you know what show I'm talking about. Warner! Warner! Yes, a little tasteless there, but that phrase alone should probably clue you in that I'm talking about the classic William Gibson play, The Miracle Worker. You know, it's the story of how Annie Sullivan helped bring blind and deaf Helen Keller out of the insular world she was in and teach her how to communicate and eventually thrive in society. Now, we all remember the movie with Anne Bancroft and Patty Duke. Well, it's 50 years since the show first played Broadway. Time for a revival of it. They tried to put one up about 4 or 5 years ago with Hilary Swank, and it ended up closing out of town. But now they're going to try it again. They're going to bring the show to Circle in the Square, a Broadway theater, coming this February, and they've gotten Abigail Breslin. She was the actress Tony-nominated for Little Miss Sunshine. She's going to be playing Helen Keller, opposite Alison Pill. She was Tony nominated for The Lieutenant of Inishmore. She'll be Anne Sullivan, which is kind of interesting, a little younger than the Anne Sullivans were accustomed to. And the director is going to be Kate Horisky. She was just named the artistic director of Seattle's Intiman Theater. Now, already, there's some controversy here, which is probably going to work to the advantage of both the show and the people who are making the controversy. There's a place called, or an organization, called the Alliance for Inclusion for the Arts. And they object to Abigail Breslin playing Helen Keller because Abigail Breslin apparently can hear and see just fine. And they're saying, well, why not give the role to someone who is at least on some level handicapped or differently abled? You know, and that's, I don't know. I think it's a tempest in a teapot. I think it's giving the organization some face time and some media time by making that protest. And also they're bringing some free publicity to this show. And it should be said that the producers of The Miracle Worker, the revival that's coming to Broadway, are going to be auditioning actresses to understudy Abigail Breslin, and they are seeing some deaf-mute actresses there, which is a kind of a chorus line I'd like to see. But please, do not think I'm going to use this opportunity to tell incredibly tasteless and vulgar Helen Keller jokes, because that is so not right. Do not expect me to start digging up old jokes like, oh, I don't know, why was Helen Keller's leg yellow? Because her dog was blind too. No, I'm not going to sink to that level. I wouldn't say something like, why does Helen Keller play piano with just one hand? Well, so she can sing with the other. No, you guys know me better than that. And I would never tell a joke like, how did Helen Keller drive a car? Well, one hand on the wheel, one hand on the road. I really think you should give me a little more credit than to tell a terrible joke like that. I really do. I won't even tell the one about her favorite color being stucco. No, absolutely not. We are moving on. And we're moving on to, well, Broadway getting just a little bit prettier here. They're going to be reviving an Arthur Miller play, A View from the Bridge. And the cast for this show are going to be Liev Schreiber, will be playing the uncle of Scarlett Johansson, making her Broadway debut this season. Basically, it's all about this longshoreman out in, I think, Red Hook, Brooklyn, and he's kind of immigrant, and he's worried about other immigrants coming over, and he puts them up in his apartment, including his rather pretty, I think it's his niece. Well, what is the dynamic of that? An uncle and a niece, I guess. I can never follow the whole family tree thing. And he won't really admit to himself that he's attracted to her, and he resents the young immigrant who is, and may end up getting that immigrant in trouble for another reason. Anyway, View from the Bridge is not, in, to my mind, one of Arthur Miller's best plays, but it's revived a lot, and people seem to like it, and he does have good, strong lead roles there. So come and see it at the Broadway Theater. It's the Court Theater this coming winter. And I think one of the interesting things about this casting, whether or not Scarlett Johansson will be good on Broadway or not, is at least she's young, and Liev Schreiber still plays pretty young, and he tends to be younger in the role of the longshoreman than the guys who usually play it. Usually it's an older Tony LoBianco father figure type. So maybe there'll be actual sexual tension here that isn't quite so creepy of this older, middle-aged man who's not admitting to lusting after this teenage niece of his. We shall see. Anyway, we move from the Scarlet Bridge to the Palace of Gypsies for the 21st Annual Gypsy of the Year competition. It's going to be taking place December 6th and December 7th at Broadway's Palace Theater. You guys know what this is. It's like they have really, really funny sketches and songs and parodies featuring a lot of the chorus people from all the Broadway shows and one or two Broadway stars as well, and it all goes to raise money for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. For more information, go to BroadwayCares.org, and also check out YouTube.com, because you can usually find a couple of scenes from older episodes of the Gypsy of the Year, and also the Easter Bonnet competition that they do in March or April, and those are usually quite fun to watch. And also in the news, Encores, that wonderful city centers, or city center series that they do where they take old musicals and they revive them in concert staging, sometimes with some costume and some blocking. And in fact, the hit and very long-running Broadway production of Chicago, the revival, came out of Encores. So now Encores is going to be doing Girl Crazy, the George Gershwin and Ira Gershwin show, featuring Anna Gasteyer, Becky Newton of Ugly Betty, and her real-life husband, Chris Diamantopoulos. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And also Broadway veteran Mark Kudish and Wayne Knight, whom we all remember from Seinfeld, playing Newman. Girl Crazy is all about a sophisticated New Yorker stranded in a cow town. The show ran more than half a year on Broadway back in 1930. I forgot to note the times or the days that it's playing at Encores, but I think it's in November. Please go check Encores City Center if you want to go Girl Crazy. And I guess the big news about Broadway this season is just how many stars that they're trying to pack in just to woo audiences. I mean, you've got Jude Law in Hamlet. Sienna Miller is doing After Miss Julie. I mentioned Abigail Breslin. There's Liev Schreiber and Scarlett Johansson. You've got Julia Stiles and Bill Pullman doing Oleana. Laura Linney and Alicia Silverstone in something called Time Stand Still. Bebe North and Nathan Lane. Well, they're actually Broadway stars. But, you know, it's this vicious cycle kind of thing. The producers have to justify these huge ticket prices that people pay now for a Broadway show, $90, $100, $120. So they do that, and they woo audiences in by getting stars that they're familiar with or excited about. But at the same time, you have to pay stars a lot of money, and you also, salaries are probably the biggest expense for a producer for a Broadway show. So you just have this continuing cycle. The stars get more expensive, so the tickets get more expensive, so the stars get more expensive. So I wish Broadway would reverse it a little bit and take more risks on shows and maybe hopefully have a little bit of lower pricing and make stars instead of getting people who are stars already. That's what Broadway used to do. You come in an unknown and you go out a star. Well, either way, it's great to share the stars of Broadway with you on Inside Broadway, and I got to see a few of them on my recent trip to New York, and I'm going to be reviewing a couple of the shows that I saw on Broadway and off right after this message from Performing Arts Insider magazine.
There is a season, turn, 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 turn the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater magazine, because this is the season for Broadway. All the big shows are opening in the next few weeks. Learn about them all. For 64 years, Performing Arts Insider has been the Bible of Broadway. Find out why by going to PerformingArtsInsider.com. Subscriptions are 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. So turn, turn, turn to Performing Arts Insider for every show under heaven.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and yes, we're back inside Broadway here. Even though I'm living in Colorado, I was lucky enough to return to New York for a week of theater going just about a week ago. I saw 10 shows in 6 days, and I'm going to talk about some of them on this episode and then save a few for the next. But first show I want to review for you, I want to get to it as soon as possible so you all can hopefully get to it as soon as possible, because there's a provisional closing notice on this show. It's Brighton Beach Memoirs, the Neil Simon comedy drama, which I think is a great play. I remember seeing the original production and thinking it was terrific, and also most of the critics at that point saw it as a real turning, not even so much as a turning point for author Neil Simon, but a step forward. He, of course, is the great playwright of The Odd Couple and of, Star Spangled Girl, and what am I forgetting? The Sunshine Boys in Chapter 2, and Barefoot in the Park. I mean, not all of these are necessarily golden oldies anymore. There was a production of Barefoot in the Park about 2 seasons ago on Broadway that was absolutely charmless, and you didn't know whether it was the cast or the play itself that hasn't worn well over 40 or 50 years. But Brighton Beach Memoirs is only about 20 years old, I think, and it signaled this step that Simon was taking from being what critics kind of accused him of being just a joke machine, of going for laughs over character development and really deep insight into the people. I mean, he would go a certain level and develop a character, but he would stop at a point and make sure that the show was really about the laughs. Well, with Brighton Beach Memoirs, he dug more into his own autobiography and his life growing up and his family and how times were tough when you had very little money and you were Jewish and the war was calling and, you know, it was difficult times and you used humor to get through them. And you see that in absolute spades in Brighton Beach Memoirs. It is a marvelous play all about this family. Eugene Jerome is the boy sort of narrator who's looking at his family. You can say it's a nostalgic play, but nostalgia coated with a real serious understanding of how dark and sad times could be and how desperate and fearful people were of everything that was going on. I mean, these were people back then afraid of losing a job, afraid of not being able to pay the rent or the mortgage or the bills that month, or running up tabs at local places because they couldn't yet pay a bill. There are also the greater fear, this being the late 1930s, early 1940s, of what was going on in Europe. So you could be afraid for your own self and your own family, and then have this greater fear of what was going to happen to the world and to America and to all the Jews in it. Brighton Beach Memoirs captures that almost with every single line of dialogue. And it bothered me when reviews came out for the current revival of BBM that I totally and completely recommend everyone see immediately if you can. Some of the critics were still saying, oh, it's joke, 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 and Simon doesn't really go deep enough, and the play is too nostalgic, and it's, 20 years have not done it well. I don't know what production they were seeing or what play they were looking at, but I think every joke is underscored pretty much by the tenderness of the situation and the difficulty of this family situation. For example, there's a point where, and Simon does this very, very well, where Eugene is making fun of the dinner that his mom cooks. She makes liver, and he hates liver, and he has all sorts of ways of saying just how much he hates eating liver. And it's hilarious. And then a little bit later, he makes another comment, and then the father makes a comment about the liver, too. On a more serious vein, he says, for gosh sakes, if nobody likes to eat this, why do you keep making it? And then the mother snaps right back and says, well, because, you know, I couldn't get the pot roast this week. Or I may be misquoting that, but the retort was meant to say, I'm making liver because we're lucky we can even afford liver on the salary that you're making or may not be making much longer. So everything, there's kind of a knife's edge, and it makes it very powerful, very, very funny still all the way through, and also terribly poignant for most of the second act. Literally, you're on this edge between laughter and tears in Brighton Beach Memoirs. And David Cromer, who is the guy who directed the current off-Broadway revival of Our Town, that is very, very good. He also did the off-Broadway musical The Adding Machine, which was very unique and inventive 2 seasons ago. Well, he absolutely nails this play. He gets all the laughs, but he also mines the characters and shows just all the sadness and fear that they're going through. And the cast, absolutely terrific. Laurie Metcalf and Dennis Boutsakaris play the husband and wife, the patriarch and matriarch of this family. Are they Jewish-ish? They are to me. Their names may not be Jewish. They may have played, you know, Laurie Metcalf, of course, you know, from Roseanne, and Dennis Boutsakaris has been on a bunch of TV shows. They're very believable and very touching and very real. Jessica Hecht, she's gotten really good reviews, deservedly, for playing Aunt Blanche, who is kind of so insular and so shy and so nervous and so terrified of the way she's raising her daughter that she's almost raising her daughter all wrong. Terrific stuff. And, of course, if you read the New York Times review, you know how he raved about Noah Robbins and Santino Fontana as the two brothers growing up together, Eugene and his older brother Stanley, and the marvelous scenes that they have together that are hysterical and true. What can I say? The sadness of Brighton Beach Memoirs is not only the melancholy of watching these people in this terrible situation, but also full of love for each other, but also knowing that because it didn't get quite money reviews, it got good reviews when it opened last week, but there were a lot of reservations and hesitations, and it wasn't selling tickets very well to begin with. So the producers have put up already a provisional closing notice. It might close by today, by this Sunday, if there isn't a groundswell at the box office immediately. And it's doubly sad because Brighton Beach Memoirs was supposed to be running in repertory with another Neil Simon play, Broadway Bound, which was the third, or considered to be the third play in his trilogy of Brighton Beach Memoirs, Biloxi Blues, and then Broadway Bound. And to my recollection, Broadway Bound was not the equal of the other two shows, but I'd certainly like to have seen it again to have another fresh look at it. I don't think we're going to get to do that because they're probably going to cancel that and close BBM. But if they don't, if you have maybe, you know, the time from when you're listening this or they let it run another week, please run to Broadway and see Brighton Beach Memoirs. Speaking of wonderful shows that I love, well, a couple of weeks ago on this program, I was all sad again because Avenue Q was closing on Broadway after about, 2,500 performances. I think it opened back in 2003 when it won the Tony for Best Musical. It actually beat out Wicked, which ought to tell you something. And it's a riot. You know, you should know it by now. It's all about this area, urban area of assumedly New York, where these puppet characters all live because they can't afford to live on Avenue A, B, C, F, L. So they live on Avenue Q, and it's a whole mix of Princeton, who's this young fella just out of college and looking for a job, and then there's Kate Munster. She happens to be a Munster, but a kind of a cute one, and she's always looking for a boyfriend and may have found one in Princeton. Then there's a Bert and Ernie type puppet pair, one of whom is gay, one of whom is not, and there's some cool, funny stuff going on there, and of course, Trekkie Munster, who is the landlord of the building that they all live in, and he's basically spends 24/7 up in his room surfing pornography on the internet.
The internet is for porn.
Hello?
Internet is for porn.
I hate porn.
Grab your dick and double click for porn. Porn, porn.
I hate net.
Porn.
I'm leaving. Porn. I hate the internet.
The internet is for internet is for internet is for porn.
The show is still delightful. It loses a little bit of its power to be so riotously funny and to be shockingly funny once you've seen it and listened to the cast album, but it's still quite wonderful. And I saw it on a night or an afternoon when two of the people were understudies, and it still was quite marvelous. Anika Larsson, playing both Lucy the Slut and Kate Munster, is just as good as the original actress who played it. And that's really saying something. So for gosh sakes, you know, they're taking a real chance with this show because it's never happened before, as far as we know, that producers have moved a Broadway show to off-Broadway. It always goes the other way around. Something's a hit off-Broadway and they think they can make real money with it. They move it to Broadway. Well, this time, they moved Avenue Q to New World Stages on West 50th Street, a smaller theater, definitely worth catching. It was a great musical in 2003. It's still terrific in 2009 and hopefully into 2010 and beyond. Something not so great is a revival of the musical Bye Bye Birdie on Broadway for really the first time since 1961 in a newly renovated theater, the Henry Miller's Theater, that was taken over by the big conglomerate, the Roundabout Theater Company, and they're the ones putting on Bye Bye Birdie. It's a musical by Michael Stewart, Charles Strauss, and Lee Adams, with a really delightful score. I mean, this is the place where Put on a Happy Face came from, and the Conrad Birdie song. What, you don't know the Conrad Birdie song? Of course you know the melody. It's We love you, Conrad. Oh, yes, we do. We don't think anyone can be. That melody came from Bye Bye Birdie, as did a couple of other really cool songs. So the problem with this revival of Bye Bye Birdie is the Roundabout this time did it backwards. Usually the Roundabout gets a very good cast and a pretty good director to put on a revival of a musical, but they get the look wrong because it looks cheap. They don't really throw money into the sets and costumes and the design. So I think that really hurt their production of Pal Joey a year ago. It was really well cast and well done, but it kind of looked a little chintzy. And that's par for the course with them. Well, here, the show looks really good. It's bright and poppy and really makes you feel that whole 1960s, early 60s, just pre-Beatles era of Ed Sullivan and also pre-Kennedy era. Looks great, but whoa, there's some problematic casting, as you've probably read from a bunch of other reviews. You know, I wouldn't call the show a complete waste of time or disaster, because if you saw this in a regional house or maybe something like the Westchester Broadway Theater, you'd be like, oh, you know, that was a pretty good job, that was well done. But for Broadway, you expect and demand more. And you certainly want more from the leads of this show, including John Stamos, playing the Dick Van Dyke role. He's not bad. He's just not especially memorable in any way. You know, if you think that Dick Van Dyke had great personality, was really funny, and could dance, John Stamos has good personality. He can act, and he can't really dance all that well. It's sort of like replacing Dick Van Dyke with Carson Daly. There's just, why bother? Why not get a real star and not someone who just brings in people because they saw him on television? Now, Gina Gershon is a different story. She plays the secretary girlfriend of John Stamos, that character. She's much more far along. She's got the body, of course, and the vavoom, and she can sing, and she moves pretty well, too, and she's a pretty good actress, so she's all right. But she's got some pretty big numbers in the show, ones that originally were performed by Chita Rivera. Okay, so big shoes to fill, not necessarily fair to compare her to Chita. But the problem is her big numbers, she's singing, she's dancing, and she's huffing and puffing. And by the middle of the song, she can barely get the words out. Again, she's really trying hard, and she has the talent. But for Broadway, we expect a little bit more. Other performers are perfectly fine. We've got Noland Gerard Funk, playing Conrad Birdie, the big teenage star who sends all the girls' hearts aflutter. He feels a little more 1990s than 1960s, but he's fine. And I very much liked Ally Trim, who plays Kim McAfee. She's the young girl who's just been pinned by her boyfriend, but also her heart is aflame by this big new rock star. Now, everybody thinks, oh, Anne Margaret in the movie. And Anne Margaret stole the movie because she looked like Anne Margaret. But she also kind of misshaped the film because the Bye Bye Birdie isn't really about that character as much as the parents and all the milieu that's going on. So here, it's much more right. Ally Trim is, or comes off as, a young girl on the verge of womanhood. She has a little bit of a sex pot in her, but she's not like this giant, you know, incredible sexual dynamo that Anne Margaret turned it into. She's a girl, you know, kind of a pretty girl, a girl who's on the borderline of childhood and adulthood, and I think Ally Trim does that really, really well. Other people in the show, Jane Houdyshell plays Albert's domineering, you know, typical, prototypical Jewish mother, head in the oven every time her husband, every time her son does something she doesn't want. I don't know, I think that character should be funnier somehow than comes off here. And Dee Hody, who's done some wonderful work on Broadway, plays Kim McAfee's mother. I don't know, she barely made an impression at all, which really points to something wrong in the direction of this. But worst of all, I'm flabbergasted by this. Bill Irwin is playing the father of this young girl. And I know, I'm assuming he was cast because he's got the mime and the physical comedy. He's brilliant at it. And there is a scene at the end of the first act where the family goes on the Ed Sullivan show, and Bill Irwin really gets to do a lot of physical comedy, and he's very, very funny. But everything else he does for the whole rest of Bye Bye Birdie is an absolute nightmare. He sings in this weird put-on voice that's as fake and awful as anything you've ever heard. It's kind of a foghorn. I have no idea what they were thinking when they cast him and they heard him try and do a song. I don't know why the director allows it, and I don't know how Bill Irwin can think that he's doing something funny or watchable or good when he's up there. And, you know, I love Bill Irwin's work usually, but boy, oh boy, this is bad, bad Birdie. Of all the shows on Broadway, I think there are 35 currently playing. This is going to be in about the bottom five. But it's nice to have the Henry Miller Theater back, and we will be back with more of Dave's Gone By right after this message.
We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TogleTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Give the gift of entertainment to yourself or others by sharing a Dave's Gone By CD. From Reckless Eric to Joe Franklin, Christine Lavin to Uncle Floyd, Dave's Gone By CDs provide hours of laughs, great conversation, and music. CDs are just $10, shipping included, and you can order at our website, davesgoneby.org. Reserve your corner of the Daverhood.
May the Lord protect and defend you. May He always shield you from shame. May you come to be in Israel a shining name. May you be like Ruth and like Esther. May you be deserving of praise. Strengthen them, O Lord, and keep them from the stranger's ways. May God bless you and grant you long life. Who will care for you? May the Lord protect and defend you. May the Lord preserve you from pain. Favor them, O Lord, with happiness and peace. O hear our Sabbath prayer.
Shalom, everybody. Shalom. It is so wonderful to be back on the radio, on the air with you all, here with a legend, an amazing human being, and an amazing talent. I'm so excited about this because, you know, I myself are something of a jack of all trades, a moish of all trades, if you will. I'm a rabbi, I'm a writer, I'm an entertainer. Occasionally, when necessary, I'm a topless dancer, but that's only for money. But listen to the resume, listen to the biography of this person that I have on the telephone with us right now. Oh my God, listen, his biography ranges from Broadway, including the original Sound of Music and A Streetcar Named Desire. He's done opera at the Los Angeles and Cleveland opera houses. He was an Oscar-nominated actor for The Defiant Ones. He's won an Emmy, ladies and gentlemen. He's a folk musician. He's a nationally syndicated radio host. He is the former president of Actors Equity. And
former vice president, and I'm so proud of this, of the American Jewish Congress, and even more than any of these amazing things, Theodore Bekel was a celebrity guest on Super Password. I cannot believe all these things that he has done. Mr. Bekel, are you with us, first of all? Hello, shalom.
Hello, shalom. Yes, yes. After this introduction, I want to meet this guy that you're talking about.
Isn't he an amazing fella? And is he 85 years old at this point? How old are you?
85.
Mazel, and how, first of all, most important thing, how are you? Are you healthy? Are you good?
Yes, I'm fine. We're talking. I'm alive. I'm surviving.
You are more than surviving. You're bringing a new show to Off-Broadway, aren't you?
Yes, indeed.
Please share. Please tell.
Well, it's called Shalom Aleichem, Laughter Through Tears. And it's a show that I wrote for over a period of about two and a half years. And a show that we did in Washington, D.C. for 5 weeks, and then in Florida, and last week we did it in Toronto for 8 performances. It is a quite a wonderful, it's a one-man play with music.
It's like Spielkes, you can't sit still, you're everywhere, a week here, a week there. Do you like the traveling still? Do you like to go around the country, or would you rather be settling down at this point?
In my line of work, you have to go where the audiences are. I would love to be at home and work where I live, but that's not in the cards, so I have to go where the audiences are. The audiences are in New York at the moment, and so we're starting at the Baruch Center. The preview is going to be on November 8th, and we're going to do shows through December 13th.
Now, are there things that you discovered about the great writer Shalom Aleichem by doing this show and other Shalom Aleichem shows? Are there things that you didn't expect?
Absolutely. First of all, most people only know Shalom Aleichem through Fiddler on the Roof. But Fiddler on the Roof is one little slice of the Tevye stories. Even Tevye himself has many more dimensions than you see in Fiddler on the Roof. And in my play, you have them. They are both comedic and tragic. That's why I call the show Laughter Through Tears. But it's not only about Tevye, it's about he wrote so many characters. I have 18 volumes of Shalom Aleichem in Yiddish sitting on my shelf right now, and I've been drawing on all of them for the show, remember to preserve, to have a legacy going for Shalom Aleichem. After, he died in 1916, but what he wrote and how he wrote, it brings back a world to us that is almost lost to us. In the show, I play some 20-some-odd characters, young yeshiva boys, old rabbis, grandfathers, grandmothers, old women, all manner of things I'm playing in the show. And it's a show with music, as I mentioned. He loved music, and there are songs of the period that I sing. The songs are partially in Yiddish and partially in English. The entire show is in English, but there's a lot of Yiddish in it, a lot about Yiddish in the show, because this is a love of Yiddish.
Was Yiddish your first language, or was it German because you were born in Austria?
Well, both. I spoke German with my mother and Yiddish with my grandmother.
How long were you in Austria before you got the hell out of there?
I was zero when I was born.
True. Some people have called me a zero now that I'm 45, so it's all right. But in other words, they left
when
Austria.
When I got out of Austria, I was 14.
Oh, my God. So you witnessed the change over there of what was going on. I mean, I read somewhere in a bio that you actually saw your neighbors reacting and responding to Hitler and all his people going through in their limousines.
That's absolutely true. I saw under our window, we lived in a major thoroughfare, and under our window I saw the armored cars, and I saw the open-air limousines with Goering and Hitler in them.
What did you think at that moment?
Well, we were already, we knew what to think, because the Germans had been in charge of Germany for the past 5 years, and now they're marching into Austria, and we had an inkling of what was going to be in store for us, and indeed, it was extreme discrimination and cruelty, although nobody could imagine the extent of the cruelty that eventually developed.
So did your whole family get out?
My father, mother, and I, yes.
Well, Mosul, and you went to... Did you go directly to Palestine, or what did you do?
Directly to Palestine. Of course, we had to... We did it on roundabout ways, because, it would have been the shorter to go directly to Italy and catch a boat. But we heard that the Austrian border guards were playing tricks on Jews. And even if everything was in order, they would send them back. They would tear up their papers, all kinds. So we went through Germany. And the Germans are, no matter what else they are an orderly people. And if everything was in order, they'll let you go. And so we went through Germany into France, and from France into Italy, and from there we went on a boat.
Now, what was it like living in Israel before it was Israel?
It was very open. Nobody locked any doors at night. We would go to the movies and just close the door, not lock it, and come back. It was a very... and I was in the kibbutz, of course. First of all, I was also in an agricultural school because I believed that the country needed pioneers. Of course, I didn't notice that I had no talent for agriculture.
Oh, I learned that the first time I tried planting something. Oh, my God. The thing started growing under the ground. Never understood that.
This is my background, and a lot of it has to do with Eastern Europe, and Sholem Aleichem has been part of my upbringing. Ever since I can remember, my father used to read Sholem Aleichem stories, plays, around the table after dinner in Yiddish. And so when it came time for me to play Tevye, it was an old friend.
But that's much already kind of later when you got to Fiddler on the Roof. But first you went to the theater in Israel, pre-Israel,
I recall.
The Habima was I guess, that's first
indeed.
Being founded.
I was a student at the Habima, and the first time I stood on the stage in a professional capacity was in a play called Tevye the Milkman. I played the constable. I had 29 words to say.
Do you remember? I'll bet you remember them.
I counted them twice.
can you say them? Can you? Were they in Hebrew and Yiddish?
No, first of all, the whole play was in Hebrew, and I no longer remember exactly what I said, except that I came to announce that they had to leave the village.
Right. You got to be the nasty part. That's
right.
Let me ask you, because we're going back all over this history, and I'm curious about the moment that things click. Like, you knew, obviously, that Austria and Germany was turning into a horrible place for Jews, and you got out, and you went to... I always wonder, when people really found out, when did you really find out what...
Not until much, much later, the extent of the horror. Much, much later. And even, although there were rumors, but, you said rumors, it's impossible that these things could be happening. It wasn't until after the liberation of the camps that we found out.
Really? It was already after that? You didn't even get the rumors? Well, you got the rumors, but you really had no inkling in 43,
no.
44, 45?
No, we did not.
Wow. And did you lose? I know, thank God, your immediate family was with you, but did you lose relatives of relatives?
We did. Yes.
So,
what can I tell you? Those of us who survive have an obligation to keep memory alive.
Let me ask: since you lived at one point, obviously, in the Middle East and Israel, and now, what's been going on since the past 60 years, since the birth of Israel. I was going to get that. You said, when you were on the kibbutz, you didn't lock the doors, you went to the movies, it was nice. The Arabs weren't a problem until it became a state.
We don't have enough time to detail the problem of theirs, but it's as much of a problem of our age, where the contrasts in the world are so marked and so... exacerbated by people yelling at each other, shouting at each other, mistrusting each other, not trusting their peaceable instincts. So I sometimes have to fight with other Jews to try and convince them that peace is something to be desired, and that peace cannot be had unless you compromise, unless you you find a way to even talk to former enemies. It's not easy.
Well, if you were Barack Obama, what would you do? You were there, and you're Jewish. You were so.
I've been finding exactly what he's doing,
which is
exactly what he's doing, and that is a support a two-state solution, because you cannot. Sure, you can be totally victorious, but if you're totally victorious, what you're creating is a permanent state of belligerence.
That's a kind of how I live my life
for 100 years.
So, but what do you do about Jerusalem?
Internationalize it.
You really believe that's the way to go? To take Jerusalem out of Israel per se?
Out of the equation.
Wow. No wonder you must get... Jews must get kind of, affronted by the thought.
So a lot of people get affronted. Christians get affronted. Muslims get affronted. Better to be affronted, but to find a way of keeping this chestnut out of the hands of the people who are dealing with it, because they're gonna get burnt fingers.
Nicely put. Let's go on to happier topics, to more artistic and creative topics, since we've done so many of them. I'm kind of wondering, first of all, you were the original Von Trapp in The Sound of Music.
Yes, I was.
Any memories of working with Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Absolutely. This was the first musical that I was ever in. And to me, it was just another play that happened to have music in it. Everybody else was trembling, and they say, Rodgers and Hammerstein and Mary Martin and Broadway. And I remember on the opening night, at the opening night, people were so uptight. I went around to all the dressing rooms to congratulate people, to wish them well, and to tell them that there are 600 million Chinese who couldn't care less.
That's brilliant. That's a wonderful way of thinking about it. And also, I've got to ask this, because you were in the movie The African Queen, one of the greatest movies ever, ever, ever made, with such amazing personalities in it. So any specific memories of working with people like John Huston and Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn?
Well,
nice going them all.
I played a lot of chess with Bogart. He was a good chess player, and I say that because he beat me. and Katharine Hepburn was a great New England lady who was very gracious to everybody, and she was lovely. And John Huston was a fabulous director, was also he liked to play tricks on people.
Oh, such as? What did he do?
People would come and visit on the set, and he would tell the crew not to let them near anybody. And so whenever they tried to get near the actors, there was always a crew member saying, "Excuse, buddy, no, you can't stand there. No, you can't stand there either."
And it was all just a goof on John Huston's part. I'm wondering also, we mentioned again and again Shalom Aleichem and Tevye. You've played Tevye more than 2,000 times in your career. How would you say that your Tevye is unique versus, obviously, Zero Mostel or Topol or Paul Lipson or Clarence Williams III? How is your Tevye special to you?
Well, Zero was a brilliant comedian. I mean, he was a comedian who chose to get serious, and I'm a serious actor who gets laughs.
Okay.
So there's a difference right there. And also, to play Tevye, I played my own grandfather. And how I remember my grandfather.
Oh, that's interesting. What do you remember about your grandpa?
Well, he was both pious and irreverent. at the same time. I'll tell you a true story. One time he gave up on religion. He said that God had let his people down. So he stopped going to synagogue. He stopped doing the things that the pious Jews do. And he did for a couple of years. And then one day the family walked into the living room, and there he was in a in a prayer shawl and tefillin, davening, and they looked at him astounded because they hadn't seen him do it in such a long time. And without breaking stride, he said, he looked up and he said, maybe this will help.
You know, that's a very Jewish kind of a thing, a very, I do appreciate that. And also, are you, how religious, if at all, are you? How much Judaism is in your daily life?
I have a lot of respect for tradition. And I believe in the power of belief. I don't believe in the kind of a God to whom you can apply, a God that rewards and punishes, a God that gives and takes away. That's not the kind of God I believe in. I believe in a moral force.
And has that been borne out in your life, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I am deeply imbued with the notion that human beings, that the better they are and the more knowledgeable they are and the more wisdom they absorb, the more they're likely to take care not only of themselves but of each other.
That is a beautiful thing. By the way, it says here in the thing that you are an American citizen since 1961. What made you want to become an American?
You know, America was a very welcoming place to me. I came here after 8 years in England, and while I had a British passport, I knew I could be British for 8 years, but I could never be English.
True.
Because they do not accept you. In New York, after 6 weeks, I was a New Yorker.
That's the way it works. It's true.
And by the way, is one of the themes of the show, the Shalom Aleichem show that I'm doing, is his desire to live among Jews in America, because he said in Eastern Europe, they were being oppressed constantly, and there were 5.5 million Jews at the time whose mother tongue was Yiddish, and yet the Tsar's government would only allow one publication in Yiddish, no more, and no Yiddish theater. And in New York, there were less than 500,000 Jews, and there were more newspapers published in Yiddish than in English. And Shakespeare was done on Second Avenue in Yiddish before it was done uptown in English.
Did you get to see the and perform in the Yiddish theater when you got to America finally in the 50s?
Yes, I did.
Oh, who did you work? Did you work with Molly Picon? Did you work with those people?
Yes. It was at the tail end. You know, I came here in 1954. By that time, there was not that much Yiddish theater that remained, but whatever there was, I saw.
Was it different to play Yiddish theater than to do, say, American theater? Did you have to do a different style? Was it more melodramatic? Or did you apply the same kind of acting techniques?
No, you apply the same acting technique. The point is that Yiddish theater had both its high plane and its low plane. And like any other theater, you know, theater is Shakespeare and theater is vaudeville, and it's both theater.
This is very true. Now, I want to wish you also a mazel tov, because apparently, and according to this as well, you'll be celebrating your first anniversary very soon to your third wife. Is this true?
That is absolutely correct.
Mazel, how did you... You were 84 years old. How did you meet a nice Jewish girl?
Well, I looked.
Well, did you look through Irving's list, or did you? I mean, what did you do?
I didn't have a shotgun. I didn't have a matchmaker. Yet the matchmaker was not in my car.
Yes, it's true. But you didn't need her. You had. Where did you meet this nice wife?
Actually, my wife is a superb artist. She's a conductor.
Oh.
Orchestral and choral, and when she works with me, she plays the piano. In fact, she's the music director of my show, the Sholem Aleichem show that you're about to see.
Oh, Mazel, I didn't realize we were both working together. That's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And let me get, is she 27 years old? Did it? No, I'm
sure. Yeah.
Hey, look, more power to you. So, are you planning anything special for your anniversary, or will you just be working on the show?
Oh, no, we'll just be working on the show. That's all. I mean, we never even had a honeymoon. We had a honey day.
A honey day? Oh, this is... What did you do for your honey... I'm not talking about the naughty stuff. I mean, did you go to Coney Island or something?
We sat by the seaside and had a glass of champagne.
This is... Somehow, this is how Theodore Bekele should be celebrating an anniversary. I see it in my mind. That is so wonderful. Now, please remind everybody one more time when and where and how they can see you being and talking about Sholem Aleichem.
Sholem Aleichem, Laughter Through Tears, will be playing at the Baruch Center for the Arts, which is on 25th Street and Lexington Avenue. We are starting, our first public performance will be on November 8th. The official opening is on November 17th, and we play through December 13th.
Oh, that's marvelous. And then maybe if people like it, will it extend perhaps? Or
you may have a phone number for them to call. I don't have it in front of me.
I will find it and I will give it towards the end of the show so everybody can go see this wonderful program and this legendary performer. And just one more wonderful question for Theodore Bekele. You are obviously not slowing down any one little bit. Do you ever see that happening, or you're just going to keep going and going, and then boom, God forbid, but one day, you know?
Well, let me put it this way. I actually looked up the word retirement in the dictionary to make sure it exists, but it doesn't exist for me.
You know what? I think that's wonderful. I hope you're doing this show, the Aleichem show, and other shows in 10 years, in 20 years, until you're 120, God willing.
Amen.
In good health, too. So, Theodore Bekele, you've just been a delight, a wonder. I thank you so much for being on my program. And everybody, please go to the Baruch Center and see your show. Blessings to you and to your new wife. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Shalom.
Moby Dick. Ulysses. War and Peace. The Bible. Big freaking deal. If you want to read a real book, a funny book, try Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, a collection of comedies by Dave Lefkowitz, me, the host of Dave's Gone By. Each play is stage-tested and relatively safe for public consumption. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, available from Holvo Books on the Dave's Gone By website. It's the great American something. Dave goes off.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and a segment called Dave Goes Off, where I go off on a topic, off on a rant or a flight of fancy. Could be something I'm mad about in all senses of that word. Could be something I'm just curious about. Could just be a little piece of my life. Well, it happened. This past week, it happened. We got our first snowstorm. As all of you who've been listening the last few weeks know, my wife and I moved in early August from New York, where we had lived all our lives, to northern Colorado. That's where we live now. It's where we work. My wife teaches at the university here. I'll be teaching a class here next semester. We're basically picking up from where we left off at the end of July in New York, and making a new life out here 2,000 miles away from Manhattan and Long Island and all of that. And for the most part, it's been a seamless transition, amazingly so. We thought it would be tough to get around because currently we don't have a car. It isn't. The university is very close by. We have a supermarket half a mile away, a bunch of places to eat within a walk or a bike ride's distance. The post office is walkable, the banks, the DMV, we've got a Rite Aid and a Goodwill. We're pretty set. It's not Midtown Manhattan. It's not Greenwich Village. It's not Chicago. It's not Fort Collins. It's not even Rockville Center, per se. But it's a charming, open, small Midwestern town that just happens to have a giant college plunked down in the middle of it, and just happens to have my wife and me plunked down in the middle of it, too. So we were worried about my wife's new job, and that's going okay. She's killing herself 80 hours a week, but that's par for the course. I was worried about being able to do my show or to work on Performing Arts Insider, the magazine I co-publish. But with everything managed by phone calls and email these days, it's really no different from doing it in New York. We worried about renting a house and whether it would be big enough, or if there would be rats or roaches or bears in the backyard, or if our two dogs would make a healthy transition here. We worried about my wife being a vegetarian and finding places to eat and decent food at the supermarket. Well, not only do we have a farmer's market all summer, but we both sometimes eat at the school cafeteria, which at any given meal offers more food than you would find in the country of Somalia, from salads to sandwiches to entrees to soft-serve ice cream, all for $5 a pop on the meal plan. It's as if every single thing we worried about, knock wood, turned out okay. Well, not every single thing. The effect of the recession on the school's budget is freaking us a bit, as well as the joys of paying two simultaneous rents while trying to sell our house back in New York. You know, we're not out of the woods in that. But most of our fears and uncertainties were mercifully groundless or at least allayed. But there was one looming question mark, one thing that everybody warned us about when we chose Colorado to make our new home. You know about the winters, right? I hope you're ready for the cold. Bring your snow shovel. You know, as well-meaning friends and family who are also enjoying just a little bit of schadenfreude because you're getting out and they're stuck in the declining tax rampant heaven-slash-hell that is New York. But, of course, in the back of our minds, they had a point. Does winter start on October 15th here and hang around until the end of March, making it a very, very long season? And I did get nervous a few weeks ago when the temperature suddenly dipped down to the 20s. I'm talking the end of September here, and here I am breaking out the long johns and smooshing on my Mike Nesmith hat, bracing for the absolute end of good weather until next Passover. Understand, we got spoiled. We moved here the first week of August, and the weather was spectacular beyond belief. The nights were cool and pleasant, and even the days were unspeakably perfect with those unmatchable western skies. Or they were hot, quite hot, and sunny, but without the humidity that makes eastern summers so miserable. I know it's a cliche, but it's generally true. It's not the heat, it's the humidity. And 95 degrees in northern Colorado, though not wonderful, not something you want to be jogging in, feels closer to 85 degrees in New York or down south. I certainly learned that when I visited Florida a couple of weeks ago, where 90 degrees in the sun was not just hot enough to fry an egg on the sidewalk, but hot enough to fry the sidewalk. Now sure, Las Vegas is horrible, and they've got dry heat like here, but Vegas hits to 113 degrees. In Las Vegas, it's not the heat, it's not the humidity, it's the fires of Satan reaching up from the underworld. Satan doesn't bother with Colorado. There's only limited gambling, and all the real sinners are probably in New Mexico. But be that as it may, we had a very cold and windy week late in September, feared as a harbinger of things to come. And then, what do you know? The weather shot back up to the 80s and turned dazzling again. You couldn't not go outside. You couldn't not admire whatever creator made America, this landscape, this airscape. But all good things come to an end, and by mid-October, we were back down in the 30s again. Bundled up, but not shivering, you don't get as much of that damp cold that you do on the water in, say, New England. But then, last week, it happened. The first storm of the season. roughly 8 inches of snow in a day and a half, and the higher elevations got well over 2 feet. We're located at the foot of the Rockies, so we were relatively spared. I still got a nice amount of dumpage, especially for this time of year. Now, understand, even though this is Colorado, the West Mountains, etc., this was early. It's not as if winter normally starts the week before Halloween. But Colorado weather is a changeable thing, and it changed. As a matter of fact, what surprised me the most was just how wussy the locals and the college people got about the first snowstorm. The college did not close, either on the day of the storm or the day after. But lots of teachers canceled classes and didn't come in. Student attendance was sporadic. This even after the snow had long stopped falling. And most of the elementary schools in the area were closed one day and opened late the next. Now that wouldn't surprise me in the New York or tri-state area. And it certainly wouldn't shock me in the South, where an inch of snow in Mobile, Alabama is enough to shut down the city for a decade. But you figure that people living by the Rockies would be more hearty and used to the white stuff. They slough it off the way they do, assumedly, in Canada or Nova Scotia or Sweden. Within reason. I mean, after a foot and a half, 2 feet, you have a snow emergency wherever you are. But a few inches overnight? I mean, I'm a pussy when it comes to snow. I don't want to shovel it. I don't know how to ski. I haven't built a snowman since I was 10, and I fear that having a snowball fight will land me in the hospital with pneumonia. But I'm skittish about a lot of things. I figure my new neighborhood would be mountain men and women, busy pulling the skis out, laughing and shoveling and drinking grog and trekking 10 miles to the store to buy canned goods and candles and chains for the tires on their motorcycles. It didn't really work that way. The kids played. They shoveled a bit. In fact, our neighbor's kids helped shovel our lawn. They volunteered, which is a kindness that makes the New Yorker in me wonder if they broke a window or something. Meanwhile, the parents stay home, off the icy roads, though most of the roads were plowed very quickly. So, I guess Coloradoans, at least around here, aren't quite so different from Easterners when coping with what is basically a cold, white, beautiful pain in the ass. I also think it's a function of this snowfall being the first one. You know how the weather people on TV news go berserk covering that very first snow, like the very first bomb launched in a war. By the 10th bomb, nobody cares. It's like, oh, is the war still on? What's on Cartoon Network? So here, I don't know, maybe that first snowstorm excites people. The novelty, the Christians getting a hint of Christmas, and all our internal clocks not ready for the different weather cycle. So we take the event as kind of a holiday. We want a little time to marvel at it, fret about it, share it, because it's all you can talk about when it happens. How bad is it in your neighborhood? Did you get home all right? Doesn't the park look gorgeous? Maybe by the third or fourth snowstorm, they won't close the schools, even if the snow is just as bad or worse than this one, because at that point, the schools might not have any more snow days to give out, or people just get used to stuff and have to buck up and get on with it. Winter Wonderland would no longer be a novelty. It'd be just another burden like bills and business. I'm not sure. I guess it'll take another snowstorm or two or four to really see how it's treated out here. Not that I'm hoping for more blizzards. One is perfectly fine, thank you very much. But we got through it, and it wasn't bad. And with all the closings and delays out here, I don't feel like such a nervous virgin coming from the East anymore. I put on my boots, I shoveled, I walked to the school, I walked to the coffee place, I clumped around in my winter coat and corduroy jeans. We may have a hard-hitting season ahead, but old man winter, I took the first punch. What else you got?
Dave's gone by.
There goes the neighborhood.
It's gone by.
There goes the neighborhood.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Oh, it goes so quickly, doesn't it? And if you like the way it goes, please email me and let me know at davesgoneby@aol.com. That's Dave, like my name, davesgoneby@aol.com. Please send me your comments, things you like, things you want to suggest. I'd love to hear from you. And please check out my website, davesgoneby.org. Also, please check out our sponsors, Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway, located at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island, 10% off for all Dave's Gone By listeners. Check out Fancy Schmancy Balloons, balloons and centerpieces to make your party special. 516-797-3229 is the number. Ask for Jeff. 797-3229. Check out Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway, for everything you need to know about what's happening on the stages of New York. PerformingArtsInsider.com. TogleTheater.com has theater reviews and feature stories from all over the world. And DavesGoneBy.org has photos and information about upcoming shows, plus our 300-plus episodes listenable in the archives. A reminder about Rabbi Sol Solomon, whom you heard earlier in the show. Shalom Dammit is still watchable at YouTube.com. It's all cut up into 8 or 10 minute pieces, but all the episodes are there, so check him out, Rabbi Sol, in Shalom Dammit. Also, catch Theodore Bekel in Shalom Aleichem, Laughter Through Tears, at the Baruch Performing Arts Center, 55 Lexington Avenue at 25th Street. That's running November 8th through December 13th, call 646-312-5073 for tickets. 646-312-5073. Very quickly, got to get through some shout-outs and mazel tovs and things like that. First of all, mazel tov to my cousin Adam and his wife Marnie on the birth of their adorable daughter Lila. Shout-out to Jeff Goodman out in Singapore, and reminding everybody a couple of things to go see around town. Maud Maggart is at Feinstein's, November 10th through the 14th. And Chris Smither and the Motivators are at Joe's Pub, November 15th. And, by the way, Dave J. is doing one more performance of John Paul George Ringo at the 13th Street Theater. That's Friday, November 6th at 7 p.m. So catch them if you can. Big thank yous to Nihal and G for being such great friends. Thanks to Mom and Dad Lefkowitz, of course, and my Aunt Bonnie and my Auntie Essie and Mama and Papa Weil, all these wonderful people, and the most wonderful of all, Joyce Weil, my adorable and delightful and very hard-working wife. Well, it's time to leave the neighborhood, but I'll be back very soon for the 320th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night, shalom aleichem, and gone by.